Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Section 119, a Aggie sports podcast, where we're going to run you through the ins and outs of the Utah State Athletics program and everything that's going on, and maybe throw in a few pop culture references and make fun of Daniel a little bit.
Yeah, but that's the usual week.
I'm Jaden Johnson. I'm joined here by...
Trevor Porath.
And the Target.
That's Daniel Hansen. Anyway, we have a pretty good show. I mean, objectively speaking, I think we got a pretty good bit of stuff to talk about today.
Defining it as like having a bunch of stuff to talk about, good show. Kind of defining the individual topics, kind of a bit of a roller coaster show, I would guess.
Yeah.
A couple of really good points, a couple of kind of like, give or take.
Probably. But, you know, right now we're kind of in the thick of the spring athletic season. All the spring sports are right in the middle of their conference play, and gymnastics is just wrapping up. So we'll talk a little bit about gymnastics and how they fared at the regional championship in Seattle. We'll talk about softball and what's going on with them. First off, though, let's talk about the most recent newsworthy event in the Utah State Athletics world, which is, I'd say, the Pro Day that just took place on, what was that, Friday? Saturday?
Friday, the March 31st.
Friday, yeah. So Trevor and I were both able to go to that. And Daniel, I'm sure you saw some of the numbers and times and everything that came out of that. But Pro Day, it's something I've never really paid much attention to. And never been to before, so it's kind of an eye opener for me to actually be there at this one. And honestly, I was pretty impressed by a couple of the athletes there.
Yeah, they did a lot of good numbers. You know, Devontae Mays with the, you know, I recorded an unofficial 4.44, and so that was pretty good for him. Also, Painter did a lot of good times and reps and stuff like that, and but the thing for him though is he's kind of small, so that's kind of got to hurt him there. But a lot of others did well, pretty well too.
Well, I went into this thing thinking, well, and like I still do, but realizing that there's really not much NFL potential in this group. This is probably the least pro potential in any graduating class we've had in a long time. I can't even think of the last one that we didn't have anybody who would really even be looked at for the draft.
It's been a few years.
I mean, probably at least 5 years or so, because haven't we had, I think we've had a draftee in each of the last five or six drafts.
I think 2 years ago we didn't.
Yeah, I think there's one in there, but I mean, we had the three last year, and then we had, of course, the 1 year we had like Wagner and Turbin and everybody else go as well. So, I mean, it's been a really good couple years for USU, and I don't know if this is kind of the sound like this is the end of Gary's players, and so now we're kind of into a little bit more of a dead zone, but we'll see.
The thing is, though, even before Gary, though, there was still a lot of NFL guys coming out of Utah State, you know, with like, obviously, he didn't recruit Bobby Wagner or Robert Turbin, and
that's true,
Kevin Curtis back in the day, and Chris Cooley, and
it was definitely more frequent.
I think it was just kind of a down year, because next year I feel like we're going to see a couple guys who will at least have a shot. This year I think it was just kind of a down year. But as Trevor mentioned, Devontae Mays, I think, really, 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 really helped his draft stock. Not that I think he will get drafted or that there even is a draft stock, but I think that he helped himself, and he's going to get a phone call really soon after the draft. Probably 32 phone calls to be exact. And there's going to be some teams desperate to get him on as an undrafted free agent.
You know, with these players, the one that had the best chance of getting drafted this year, he pretty much was injured most of the year, so that kind of took his stock down a little bit. Obviously, Devontae Mays, I think if he would have played a full season, then he would be, you know, fifth, sixth round considerable for sure. But obviously that didn't happen well, so he had to do well here, which he did. He, you know, obviously, you know, jumping 40-plus inches on the vertical, 20-plus reps.
Let me throw some numbers at you here. So Devontae Mays recorded a 40.5-inch vertical jump. Now just picture that in your head. I think I can maybe jump a foot, like, given I'm white and unathletic, but I think I could maybe jump a foot. He jumped 40.5 inches, would have ranked number one at the NFL Combine. Out of all those freak athletes we saw at the Combine, that would have been number one. A 10-foot-9-inch broad jump. So from a standing position, he jumped 10 feet and 9 inches. That would have been number three at the NFL Combine. 22 bench press reps, which would have placed number four at the Combine. These are all for running backs, I should say. Not for all around, but for running backs. And a 4.47 40-yard dash. Some had it clocked a little bit higher. Some had it lower. I have a problem with the 40-yard dash, and maybe we'll talk about that. But that would have placed him fourth at the NFL Combine as well. So freak-like numbers. Absolutely just – I mean, those numbers, if you just looked at those, you would think this is a third-round guy. But obviously, you know, with the health issues and there's not a ton of tape for the scouts to look at, I understand he's probably not going to be drafted. And that's, you know, that's fine. There's a lot of great players that don't get drafted. And I think he's still going to make a good NFL career out of it, though.
Sometimes when you're that sort of player, not being drafted can actually be a blessing, because then you can sign with a team that fits you more.
Yeah, I've heard several players say, you know, like 6th and 7th round draft picks say that they would have rather not been drafted so they can pick where they want to go. Rather than, you know, say you're picked in the 7th round by the Browns. Would you really rather be picked there or be undrafted and you can choose to go to a team with a good O-line? Choose to go to a team that fits your style of play where you're going to have a shot to make the roster rather than being the 5th guy that the Browns have on their team.
Isn't that why they call the last pick of the draft Mr. Irrelevant? Because there's a lot of times where undrafted free agents make more teams than... you know, have a better shot of making a team than that guy does.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, say, though, that's not going to happen. I think Devontae Mays is actually going to get drafted. I'm just looking here just through a couple draft stuff. First of all, you can't find anything really for Devontae Mays for the NFL draft online. He doesn't have a profile or any of his numbers really out there. But Arrowhead Addiction, they're like the Chiefs fan page kind of. And they actually have a really good idea that this guy might be drafted late round as one of the hidden gems. I mean, you look at, like we were kind of just mentioning about how it's kind of a down year for Utah State. This was still like 21 teams showed up to the pro day. That's actually, I think, higher than we've had in the past couple of years. Like, there's been a couple of years where I've only seen like 10 or 12. And that's partly kind of scheduling with other college and stuff. But I think one of the main reasons I think is Devontae Mays. I mean, other than him, you look... maybe White Houston, maybe Austin Stevens can get a shot on a training roster or training camp. I mean, Devontae Mays, I think, is the only one I think that I could project to some role at the next level within the next couple of years.
I disagree there in that I think that there are a few guys that are going to actually make squads and make somewhat contributions, and we'll talk about that. But I, to your point, I can see what you're saying. That seriously, what is a 7th round draft pick worth in the NFL? Very, very, very little. And so a team knowing that, like, we could either throw out a 7th round draft pick and pick this guy up and own the rights to him right away. If there's a team that really thinks he's a hidden gem, which I think that, you know, the scouts, their ears were perked up, as you mentioned, all 21 of them in attendance at Pro Day. I think that they really perked up their ears at these numbers. And if you're going to say we could either throw away a 7th round draft pick, or not throw away, but, you know, use a 7th round draft pick and pick up this guy and automatically have the rights, or hope that we get a convincing phone call with him that convinces him to come sign with us immediately after the draft as an undrafted free agent, it's probably worth the risk there. So, as you said, I wouldn't be too surprised if he does get picked up after that kind of performance. You just don't see that kind of a pro day from anybody.
You do have to kind of, at least in my mind, kind of tone that down a little bit, just because pro day numbers do tend to be a little bit higher than combine numbers, or a little bit better for the prospect.
But you can't exaggerate a broad jump number, or you can't exaggerate a vertical number.
Like, you can't exaggerate those, but it's even then, it's still you're at your home place. Like, other prospects, like, they'll have the same thing. Like, they'll perform much better at a pro day than they will at a combine. I'm not saying that to take away. I'm not saying that to take away the numbers. They're still really great numbers. They're going to perk up. They're going to catch the attention of a lot of scouts. But, I mean, me personally, and this is just kind of a not prejudiced thing, but just kind of personal thing, is that comparing a pro day number to a combine number isn't always apples to apples, in my opinion. That said, those numbers are terrific for Devontae Mays. And if he goes in, like, on that visit with the Chiefs, on that visit with, like, the Raiders that we've heard kind of rumors of and stuff like that, if he's able to replicate those numbers, then we're looking at, I think, somebody will spend a sixth or a seventh round pick on. Like you said, there's not a ton of value. All those, like, draft value charts for picks, they don't even, like, assign a value to seventh round picks, pretty much. They're 0 points on that scale. So if a team feels inclined, they think they might find a good Devontae Mays, could be a really good, I think, kind of red zone back at the next level, a really good power back. I think he's got that ability in him. Then I think there's a really good chance we hear his name called.
Now, if you have this on your bucket list, if you've always wanted since the time you were a little kid to be yelled at by an NFL scout and you've never had that opportunity, I'm telling you, find a way to get a press pass, go to an NFL or go to Utah State Pro Day and sit on the special scout bench. You'll get yelled at. Anyway, other takeaways from the pro day. I think that you mentioned that you think that Devontae Mays is the only guy that is really going to have much of an NFL career. I think that Wyatt Houston will make a team this year. I think he'll make a 53-man roster this year, and I think that he could find his way into getting more and more reps within the first couple of years of his career. Because he we've talked a lot about how underutilized he was. And he didn't have, like, an eye-popping crazy pro day or anything like that. But he's very consistent. He's right where he needs to be, I think, to be an NFL player. And I think that, well, of course he's not going to get drafted. I think he will get picked up and make a 53-man.
Right, we'll go on with that. You know, our last tight end to really do anything, like our last tight end to make a roster, and it took him a couple years, DJ Tealavea. But in my opinion, I think Wyatt Houston is a little better than DJ. DJ, he was more of a blocking tight end. He couldn't catch as well as Wyatt Houston can. So I think it's going to be – he'll have a good shot of that. And also, while we were there, he kind of surprised some of us. And at the end of the – everything was done, he was actually doing some long snapping for the scouts.
Yeah, and that could also get him drafted. And let me clarify a little bit. I don't think – what I was saying is I don't think there's any other player besides Mays that might have a good contributing career over the next couple of years. I think there are a couple of players – like Houston or maybe Painter, that could be like back end of the roster guys, practice squad, or maybe a special teams guy. Devontae Mays, I see, is the only guy that I think that could come in next year or the year after and actually produce sizable stats. That's kind of what I meant by that.
Okay, I understand. Other than those three, okay, so Devontae Mays looked great. We talked a lot about him. Wyatt Houston, I feel like he's got a really good shot on the next level. You mentioned the name Jens Painter. That's a really intriguing one because he had a really nice pro day. He turned some heads by the scouts. But he's a real small guy. He never really contributed that much for Utah State. He's an athletic freak, though, and I could see him making a practice squad, at least for like a special teams
He did do 4 years of special teams, which they saw that. It's like he could be a nice, you know, special teams guy out there.
That's the thing. He fits as a good, I think, runner. Like you said, athletic. He's got some speed, and he's never, I don't think, going to be like a player that they're going to count on like on offense or defense. But, I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that will make a pick specifically for special teams. Patriots, Ravens, those teams, they do that frequently. So I could see.
And more in the NFL, yeah. I think that teams are doing that.
Yeah, so I don't think. Again, like Painter's definitely not going to get drafted, but there's going to be a couple teams that are going to call him afterwards just solely for his special teams abilities.
If nothing else, he'd be a hell of a practice squad player. But the other one that I think – so those three I feel like have a really good shot at least, you know, signing undrafted free agent contracts. The other one that I think is Austin Stevens. Now, before Pro Day and – really through much of the season and before the season, I was feeling that Austin Stevens is probably the top pro prospect out of this group. Obviously, the offensive line was garbage this year, and that probably really hurt his stock. I saw before the season some guys projecting him as like a fifth, sixth rounder in the draft. I think that just the offensive line as a whole being so bad hurt him. He had a pretty poor pro day. Again, how much stock they actually look into that, we'll see. But it was really, really unimpressive overall. So we'll see what happens with Austin Stevens. I hope he can make a team. But while I'm on this subject, I want to mention, I know why we were so bad last year. Not because of Austin Stevens, but because
we were not starting DJ Nelson at quarterback.
Well, that's part of it. But our
because
running back.
Because of Castle Manor parties.
That's part of it as well. There's a lot of different things. But our running back, our starting running back, put up more bench reps than any of our offensive linemen. That's pretty bad. We didn't have a single offensive lineman that could put up 22 bench press reps. Now, while Devontae Mays was, you know, that's a lot for a running back, most offensive linemen are putting up 30, 35. Some of them are putting up 40 bench press reps. And we didn't have a single one that got 20. That's pretty bad.
And also we had to call in former Aggie Chucky Keaton to do the throwing for them because all of the people at Pro Day didn't want to be getting thrown by Kent Myers.
I actually think that there is a rule prohibiting current student athletes from participating in Pro Day. So I'm pretty sure, and I could be wrong on that.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
I tried to find, and I couldn't find anything about it, but I think that there is a restriction on current athletes participating.
Even if they're just being like a quarterback person?
Yeah, just because of all the rules the NCAA has. And also, if you're Utah State, I don't think you'd want to risk him getting injured or anything as well.
But I'm with you. I'd rather catch a pass from Chucky than Kent Myers.
I don't know. The last couple of years from Chucky was just...
Chucky, though.
Or kind of like the last couple of years Kent's been doing.
Chucky looked really good at Pro Day. No, I mean, I get he's a coach and obviously not going anywhere to play professionally. But his arm was on point. There was even a couple NFL scouts joking, oh, is this guy... Is he draft eligible? But
yeah, you could probably already get him to a UFA right now.
I'm sure he's more than happy with his Oregon State coaching job. And it was good to see him back in Logan, see a former Aggie legend.
Wearing his Beaver gear.
Yes, wearing his Beaver gear. But, you know.
At least we know they're not afraid to come back to Logan after they're done.
Well, Torrey Green was.
Well, he didn't have much of a choice to come back, though. Anyways, we got some other things, I think, to talk about apart from football.
That's the most football we've talked in a long time.
Yeah, no, it's kind of went down a little bit of a rabbit hole of football for a while.
Spring game's coming up this Saturday, though. Maybe we'll be able to talk a little bit about that next week and what we see from the spring game.
Oh, some spring game hot takes.
I saw it.
I tell you guys, Kent Myers is a real dark horse Heisman candidate. Did you see those throws he was making on Saturday?
I saw on ESPN, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but they were talking about that I guess Rex Ryan is getting out of coaching.
On the countdown.
I mean, yeah, he's already kind of out of coaching, but his first assignment, because now he's going to be like a full-time analyst, and his first assignment, they're having him do like, I think it was Florida State's Pro Day. Or no, not their pro day, their spring game. It's like, how would you feel? They're like, oh, welcome to the crew. We're gonna put Tony Romo as our head analyst. And we're gonna have you go do some college spring game.
Well, that just kind of goes to show who those two people are. Tony Romo's a little bit knowledgeable, knows how to at least play football. Rex Ryan knows how to eat a chicken wing.
Anyway, that is a tangent. But maybe we'll come in with some hot takes about the spring game since it's so important. Maybe we could have Rex Ryan come up and come onto the podcast to talk about Utah State's spring game.
Yeah, let's not. But we should probably get the hashtag Kent for Heisman hashtag probably get that squared away. Make sure we've got that saved.
Doesn't every team, like, before the season, any, like, halfway decent team start a Heisman campaign for their favorite player?
I feel like we're going to see Taysom for Heisman just out of habit from BYU fans.
It's just, to me, that's just the stupidest thing in the world. Why are you starting a campaign for a guy before he's even played a game in the regular season?
I'm actually going to start a DJ for Heisman.
Okay, see, that's different because he deserves
it. No, we're going to do it's going to be DJ for Feisman. We're going to start our own Feisman Award for the best place kicker holders in America. Because DJ's got that wrapped up.
Yeah, oh, no question. No question. I just, maybe, like, I know this is a long shot, but if there's one player on the current Utah State roster who could win a Heisman.
I'd have to say Columbia just because of the potential.
We're going to go entirely based off of potential. Okay, let's start at Columbia for Heisman.
Let's do it.
Or maybe like...
He'll probably be redshirting, so let's go Love.
Anywhere.
I'm still just going to do Columbia. I'll just bring a poster. Heisman. Even though he's redshirting, I'll bring a poster that's just Columbia for Heisman. And absolutely nobody's going to know what the heck that's talking about.
Like, who is Columbia?
I'll know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like... A couple people will, and Columbia himself will probably like wander the side and just be like, "Hey,
you're
like,
dude, making me look bad."
Yeah, I'm like, "Come on, man,
wait till next year." Anyway, how did we even get down that?
Because it's the first time we've had something real to talk about football for like 3 months.
But I feel like I was going somewhere with this, and then
I don't know. We got onto Tony Romo and Rex Ryan, and that just kind of lost it. Anyways.
What else is going on in the world of Aggie athletics?
I would say the two teams I think that we always like come in here like every single week. It's just like, oh, what should we talk about this week on the podcast? Well, like softball's killing it and tennis is killing it. Yeah. And this week, softball killed it and tennis killed it. Like that's like a scheduled tweet. Like it's a scheduled podcast that we come in here and we're like, softball's doing amazing, or tennis is doing amazing.
Let's go ahead and record next week's podcast today. And I feel like we could pretty accurately say softball's killing it, tennis is killing it.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so softball team's a little bit confusing because they've played three Mountain West series, and they've won all three of the series. They're all three-game series, so in every one of the three, they've won two of the three series. Or two of the three games in the series. I made that way more confusing than it needs to be. In every series they've played, they've won two out of three games.
And they've always lost the Sunday game.
Yeah. So they always win the first two and then lose the third. I don't know what's going on. But, I mean, still, they're sitting up at the top of the Mountain West standings, looking real good. 6-3 overall in the Mountain West right now. And just came away with two out of three of the games that they played in Boise, which we talked about last week being a pretty big series for them, as Boise State's looked pretty good this year. And not bad. I mean, they really dominated the first couple of games and then a 4-2 loss on Sunday, but even that, they had a real good shot at it.
I feel like you could listen to us just talk about that then, right there, and just be like, I can't differentiate that between this week or last week or the week before. Or anything like softball's just been like consistently pumping out good wins, consistent play for the entire season. So I mean,
yeah,
it's nice to see that going into conference play as well, I guess.
Yeah, they've got a big week this week with four games this week. They've got softball game, or they've got BYU on Wednesday, which really that doesn't matter as far as conference standings. That's not going to make any difference, and that's really the one thing that matters at this point. But getting a win over BYU, who is top 25 right now, would be just huge for I think the team's confidence and for national ranking opportunities, even though they're probably still a little ways out from that. But
I think recruiting would be like
recruiting for sure.
I mean, Utah State softball's been like, I don't want to really say mediocre for a couple of years, but it's just been like kind of a little bit
bad for a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the first year where it's really been like excitement around the team. So you always need to capitalize on that and have like a good, solid win where you can also point to recruits like, no, this is not just fake stuff where we're just playing Weber State or Southern Utah and winning and those teams. We can play the Boise States, BYUs of of the College Soccer World. Fresno State later on, I think, is one of the bigger games. So, I mean, that's going to be huge, I think, for sustained success after this season.
Yeah, and beating BYU in any sport, you know, is good. So beating BYU in Quidditch, that's still awesome, you know.
We beat them in chess. I don't care. I'm sorry. I just don't. But you're right. Just having an in-state rivalry and BYU, as I said, a top 25 team right now. Utah State, they've had a really good season, but they haven't played anybody who's like a really good team. This is the first really good team that they've played. And I think it's going to be a little bit of a, you know, we'll be able to see a little bit more of what they're made of. We've talked about, last week we talked about how good this team is as far as like nationally ranked offense. So good at hitting, so good at knocking them out of the park, so good at stealing bases. Now they're going to put that up to the test against BYU. So that's Wednesday at 4. And then this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and this may change because it looks like it's supposed to be crappy weather and they may try to do a doubleheader Friday or... So stay tuned for that and check the site before you actually go out to the ballpark. But Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Fresno State, who is the top dog in the Mountain West. They're the only team that went to the national tournament last year. They won the Mountain West last year. They're number one right now. They're preseason number one. That's a really big series.
We're actually two games ahead of Fresno State right now.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Right now. Yeah, right now we are ahead of them. But preseason... And like they're projected to win the conference, so that's the big dog.
They're still the king on the throne, though. We're trying to dethrone exactly. Or queen, I should say, softball.
And then this is also our weekly advertisement for the food at softball and baseball games. It's worth it.
Winning that series, you know, if they're able to take two out of the three games or three out of the three, would be enormous for the team. As far as building a little bit of a lead on Fresno State, helping themselves up at the very top of the conference where they are right now, and confidence. I mean, to take down the reigning champ, that'd be a big one. So, 4 games in 5 days for the softball team, huge opportunity to capture some of those.
Yeah, other team that's killing it that we mentioned, tennis. Killed it. UNLV was probably one of their main competition sources in the Mountain West, and they just absolutely pulled out some miraculous win there. It came down to the last match from one of their players, from Jonas Meyer, who was down in the second set and had to fight off 5 straight match points.
This was crazy. I saw a video of it.
Yeah, he fought off 5 straight match points in the second set, then came back in the third set and finally won it. So 4-3 win for the Aggies. That's all they had this past week. And then they've got 4 matches this week, which are all kind of...
That's a lot, huh?
Yeah, I mean...
That's a ton.
Like, tennis takes a lot out of you. Like, they're drenched, like, when they're finished. So
usually they play, like, 1 or maybe 2 a week.
Yeah.
Period.
Like, occasionally they'll have, like, a doubleheader, but then that's, like, the only thing they'll have that week. But this week they've got St. Mary's on, Thursday.
Thursday, 6,
then
yep.
Weber State and Air Force on Friday. And then New Mexico, which is actually the other team that might be able to challenge them in the Mountain West on Sunday. So, huge week. They should at least go 3-1. Probably should go 4-0.
This is going to be a busy, busy weekend for USU Athletics. And we'll go over the entire calendar here at the end of the show. But, you know, that's if the tennis team is able to go and win... Those first 3 games really don't matter, I suppose, as much as Fresno State and Air Force are a little bit further down the table. But if they're able to get – and they really should win those, as you said. If they're able to beat New Mexico, that's just going to put so much separation between them and the rest of the conference.
If they win New Mexico, they should win the conference undefeated. There's not another team in the conference that can put out a lineup that can actually contend with the Aggies for a full 6 singles matches.
Huge opportunity for them. Like – This is like a season-defining weekend, I think, for both tennis and softball.
I think it's fair to say that.
Really big opportunities.
I mean, softball, if they pull out a series win against Fresno, you get the tiebreakers. They'll have, I don't know, you get a 2-1 series win, they'll be up, like 3 games on Fresno?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then tennis, they're undefeated 2-0. They'd be 4-0 in conference play after this week if they can win all 4 matches, beating the 2 biggest – opponents that they've got in the conference. So, I mean, we're looking at next week being able to, like, prematurely crown two teams Mountain West regular season champs if the Aggies can pull out a good weekend here.
It's moving weekend for the Aggies.
Masters reference.
I can't wait. I'm so excited for the.
You watch the Masters?
Masters is like the side tangent
I'm
here.
I'm so excited.
The Masters is my favorite event of the year, apart from maybe like the Super Bowl or March Madness.
I love the Masters.
I love the Masters
Why
too.
Why is it on such a busy weekend, though? The Aggies have so much stuff going on, and I want to be at all this stuff, but then at the same time, the Masters is going on, and I don't want to feel like a bum sitting on my couch when I could be out.
That's why you get the Masters app, and you can just watch the Masters on your phone as you're watching the Aggies.
Yeah. And then, plus, we don't have, like, anything going on.